Question. What reveals the truth by hiding it? Answer. A riddle. Notice that my question was a riddle and the answer was a riddle. Riddles can be puzzling, playful, mysterious, and challenging. The Hebrew word for riddle is kiddah, dark saying, a parable or proverb. In the Bible, there are dozens of what might be called riddles. Historical allegories, symbolic prophecies, surprising metaphors, and Hebrew and Greek puns. However, the Bible contains only one riddle that follows the classical model. By the classical model, I mean the most famous riddle of ancient times, and possibly of all time, the riddle of the Sphinx from the myth of Oedipus. You might have heard it. The tragic character Oedipus, who is doomed by ignorance and pride to kill his own father and marry his own mother, is traveling to the city of Thebes. This was not the Egyptian Thebes, but a city in central Greece. The road to Thebes was guarded by a monster called the Sphinx. The Greek version of the Sphinx had the body of a lioness, the head of a woman, and eagle's wings. The Sphinx would waylay travelers and ask them a riddle. When they failed to answer it correctly, she devoured them. The name Sphinx means strangler. Possibly this is because a lioness will bring down a large animal by clamping its jaws on the throat of its prey and holding on until the animal suffocates. Then she'll tear through the thick hide after the animal is dead. Even the Bible describes lions strangling their prey at Nahum 2:12. So the Sphinx confronts Oedipus and poses her famous riddle. What has one voice but goes on four legs, then two legs, then three legs? Oedipus correctly gives the answer, man, because man crawls on all fours as an infant, walks upright in adulthood, and uses a cane in old age. It turns out that there is a deadly bet over the riddle. If Oedipus had failed to answer it, he would have been killed. Since he does answer it correctly, the Sphinx kills herself instead. In some versions, she hurls herself off a high rock or wall. In others, she devours herself. Oedipus not only wins his life, he is rewarded with the throne of Thebes and takes another step toward his tragic fate. So much for the classic riddle. The Bible also contains a riddle that is connected with an ill-fated hero. He, too, confronts a threatening lion, and the riddle is the subject of a life-and-death bet. I'm referring to a riddle that occurs in the story of Samson in the book of Judges. The account about Samson is older than the Sphinx's riddle, which doesn't appear as we know it in the legend of Oedipus until just a century or so before Jesus. Samson lived more than 1,000 years before Christ. Israel was then a collection of tribes without a king or a capital city. These tribes inhabited the hill country overlooking the eastern shore of the Mediterranean. The Philistines were one of the so-called sea peoples who lived on the coastal plain itself. They were feared around the Mediterranean as aggressive and experienced warriors bent on expanding their territory. Like most rival nations who lived in the same area, the Philistines and the Israelites to their east frequently clashed in battle and yet continued to trade with each other during their long history. The Philistines had a technological advantage in that they had learned to smelt iron. Their weapons were superior to the softer bronze weapons used by the Israelites of this period. As the book of Judges shows, the Philistines were capable of enforcing harsh demands on neighboring Israelite towns, keeping them impoverished and on the defensive. The absorption of Israel by Philistia was not out of the question. The Bible presents Samson as one of Israel's heroes, empowered by God with superhuman strength to harass the Philistines and hold their ambitions in check. Most people know that near the end of the story, Samson is betrayed into the hands of his Philistine enemies by his lover Delilah. The Philistines blind Samson. They bring him into the temple of their god Dagon to mock him. He miraculously pushes apart the supporting pillars of the temple, causing it to collapse. Samson himself dies, but he takes 3,000 Philistines with him. The end is typical of the Samson saga, attack and counterattack, with the Philistines getting the worst of it. The riddle we're interested in occurs in an early episode, before the betrayal by Delilah. It happens when Samson is a young man. He wants to marry a Philistine woman, much to the disappointment of his parents. I'm going to read from Judges 14, from just after the place where Samson tells his parents about his plans. His father and mother replied, "Isn't there an acceptable woman among your relatives or among all our people? Must you go to the uncircumcised Philistines to get a wife?" But Samson said to his father, "Get her for me. She's the right one for me." His parents did not know that this was from the Lord, who was seeking an occasion to confront the Philistines, for at that time they were ruling over Israel. Samson went down to Timnah, together with his father and mother. As they approached the vineyards of Timnah, suddenly a young lion came roaring toward him. The Spirit of the Lord came upon him in power, so that he tore the lion apart with his bare hands, as he might have torn a young goat. But he told neither his father nor his mother what he had done. Then he went down and talked with the woman, and he liked her. I'll break in here to say that it's not clear why Samson is separated from his parents when he kills the lion. It seems that a longer course of events has been abbreviated. Continuing now, sometime later, when he went back to marry her, he turned aside to look at the lion's carcass. In it was a swarm of bees and some honey, which he scooped out with his hands and ate as he went along. When he rejoined his parents, he gave them some, and they too ate it. But he did not tell them that he had taken the honey from the lion's carcass. Now his father went down to see the woman, and Samson made a feast there, as was customary for bridegrooms. When he appeared, he was given 30 companions. "Let me tell you a riddle," Samson said to them. "If you can give me the answer within the 7 days of the feast, I will give you 30 linen garments and 30 sets of clothes. If you can't tell me the answer, you must give me 30 linen garments and 30 sets of clothes." Let's pause again. The attendants given to Samson were young Philistine men from the area. Samson has offered long odds on his riddle. If he wins, the relatively prosperous Philistines only have to give him one change of clothes apiece. If they guess the riddle, he has a large debt to pay, 30 changes of clothes. "Tell us your riddle," they said. "Let's hear it." He replied, "Out of the eater, something to eat. Out of the strong, something sweet." For 3 days they could not give the answer. On the fourth day, they said to Samson's wife, "Coax your husband into explaining the riddle for us, or we will burn you and your father's household to death. Did you invite us here to rob us?" Then Samson's wife threw herself on him, sobbing, "You hate me. You don't really love me. You've given my people a riddle, but you haven't told me the answer." "I haven't even explained it to my father or mother," he replied, "so why should I explain it to you?" She cried the whole 7 days of the feast. So on the seventh day, he finally told her, because she continued to press him. She, in turn, explained the riddle to her people. Before sunset on the seventh day, the men of the town said to him, "What is sweeter than honey? What is stronger than a lion?" Samson said to them, "If you had not plowed with my heifer, you would not have solved my riddle." Through treachery and intimidation, the Philistines put Samson under an extortionate burden, just as they had the entire nation of Israel. Samson responds by going to war against them personally. Before it's over, Samson will kill many Philistines. They, in turn, will kill the woman he was originally going to marry, and subvert the woman whom he later falls in love with, Delilah. Scholars have puzzled over this enigmatic story. I've already pointed out that Samson's riddle is posed as a challenge, and there is an accompanying bet, just as with the riddle in the story of Oedipus. Samson's bet, though initially less serious than the one in the Greek tragedy, quickly becomes grave when the Philistines threaten to kill Samson's intended bride if she fails to come up with the answer. Now, listen again closely to the riddle itself. Out of the eater, something to eat. Out of the strong, something sweet. It's not actually a question, which is what we expect of a riddle. It's a song, a snippet of Hebrew verse. We can render it as a rhyme in English because, coincidentally, eat rhymes with sweet. In Hebrew, it's rhythmic and might have been chanted in a minor key. We have to assume that it implied a question. What am I talking about? By hook and crook, the Philistines get the answer. However, they don't deliver it in the form of an answer. Here is their reply once again. What is sweeter than honey? What is stronger than a lion? Scholars noticed many years ago that we are looking at a two-part question that suggests a single answer. In other words, the solution happens to take the form of a riddle. What is sweeter than honey and stronger than a lion? So we have a riddle that is really a song, and an answer that is really another riddle. Why are the riddle and the solution presented in this unusual manner? That is the larger riddle the story poses. Does Samson's puzzling saying have to do with nothing more than an accident of nature? Bees made a hive in a lion carcass, and Samson got into a dispute with his enemies over it. If you think that these verses could not have any greater significance than that, you can turn off this essay right now. Otherwise, join me in digging below the surface to see what we find. In an article in the Journal for the Study of the Old Testament in 2003, Jeremy Shipper surveyed the scholarly literature on the riddle of Judges chapter 14. He reviewed several proposed answers to the question, "What is sweeter than honey and stronger than a lion?" Two of those suggestions are correct. Partly correct, I should say. We'll get to them later on. Shipper himself believes that the Samson story is so laden with secrecy and ambiguity that there is no final solution, either to the riddle itself or to the questions that a perceptive reader is likely to ask about the plot. To Shipper, the storyteller intends to suggest possibilities, none of which is either correct or incorrect. I don't entirely agree, but Shipper makes some keen observations while trying to demonstrate his point. For example, Judges 14:14, simply translated, says that from the eater came food, and from the strong came sweetness. We assume that the eater must be the lion that Samson killed. But remember that Samson, when he found the honey in the lion, first ate it himself as he walked along, then gave some to his parents to eat. This is actually the only eating that occurs in the episode. Samson, the strong man, was at one time both the eater of the honey and the source of the honey eaten by his father and mother. From strong Samson, the honey eater, came honey for others to eat. By using words that apply equally to the lion and Samson himself, the song about the eater blends the identity of Samson with that of the lion. The answer to Samson's riddle asks, in part, what is stronger than a lion? It sounds like a rhetorical question, implying that a lion is stronger than anything. But in the story, there is someone who was stronger than a lion, Samson, who killed a lion with his bare hands. We find a nearly identical expression in one other scripture text, covering events that occurred later in Israelite history. Israel's first king, Saul, his son Jonathan, and Jonathan's friend David, who became Israel's second king, would continue the long struggle against Philistia that was begun by Samson. When Saul and Jonathan were both killed in battle, David composed a song, a eulogy, found in the first chapter of 2 Samuel. In his song, he refers to Saul and Jonathan as being, quote, swifter than eagles and stronger than lions, unquote, because of their valor against the Philistines. This poetic description would be even more appropriate to Samson, who first challenged Philistine power. After the events of Samson's doomed betrothal, he became a lion-like adversary to Israel's Philistine oppressors. The Bible regularly uses the figure of the lion of whomever can inspire fear and bring destruction, invading armies, the devil, even God. Samson filled that bill as he instilled fear and spread destruction among the Philistines. Judges 13:5 says that even before Samson's birth, God predicted that Samson would begin to deliver Israel out of bondage to the Philistines. He did so by single-handedly defeating whole contingents of Philistine soldiers through God's power. His greatest victory, though, cost him his life. The Bible is careful to note that when Samson brought down the Temple of Dagon on himself and his tormentors, he killed more Philistines than he had in his entire career up till then. I believe that the death of the attacking lion in Judges chapter 14 foreshadows the death of Samson himself. The lion's death, by an unusual course of natural events, produced sweet honey. Samson's death did the same. The dominance of Israel by the Philistines was so burdensome that 1 Samuel 4:9 describes it as slavery. The Bible also says that slavery has a taste. It tastes bitter. When the Israelites had eaten the Passover meal in preparation for leaving slavery in Egypt, they ate bitter greens, as commanded in Exodus 12:8, corresponding to their bitter lot as slaves of the Pharaoh, as described in Exodus 1:14. The opposite of slavery is freedom, and the opposite of bitter, not surprisingly, is sweet. If that were not obvious enough, there are verses that contrast bitter with sweet. Proverbs 27:7, Isaiah 5:20, and James 3:11. Samson, the honey eater, had also tasted freedom through the power of God's Spirit. On one occasion, Samson's enemies thought they had trapped him in the town of Gaza, but he pulled the city gates out of their sockets and walked away with them. By forfeiting his life to lift the Philistine yoke off Israel, strong Samson gave his people a taste of sweet freedom as well. The Bible gives us two more clues that Samson was figuratively a lion. The first is what Samson did after inflicting a bloody defeat on the Philistines, as recorded in Judges 15:8. The verse says that after the battle, Samson went down and lived in the cleft of the rock of Etam. His behavior imitates that of a solitary lion, biblically speaking. The scriptures describe lions as having lairs or dens. The common Hebrew word for lair is mehona, a sheltered area where a lion can escape the heat of the day, take refuge from danger, or lie in wait for prey. Some passages to that effect are Job 37:8, Psalm 104:22, Song of Solomon 4:8, and Amos 3:4. The word mehona does not occur in Judges 15:8, but a cleft in the rock like the one Samson used for shelter fits the description of a lair that we find in Jeremiah 21:13. In that verse, God says that the rebellious king of Judah, traditionally likened to a lion, and his princes are dwelling at a rock of the valley in a lair, mehona, where no one dares to come after them. The exact location where Samson went is uncertain, but the probable meaning of the name Etam, the meaning given by Jesenius' Hebrew lexicon, for example, is a place of ravenous creatures. The online Hebrew dictionary at blueletterbible.org lists the meaning of etam as lair of wild beasts. Our final clue about Samson as a lion requires an explanation of the symbolism attached to the various tribes of Israel. The main source of this information is two passages that poetically bless each tribe and memorialize the characters and destinies of Jacob's descendants. The first passage is Genesis 49:3-27, and the second is Deuteronomy 33:6-25. Between these two passages, nine of Israel's tribes are likened to animals. Most famously, the royal tribe of Judah, the tribe of David and Jesus, is said to be a lion. That symbolism is also found in Ezekiel 19:1-9 and Revelation 5:5, among other texts. I mentioned a minute ago that it is implied in Jeremiah 21:13. Besides Judah being called a lion, Issachar is called a donkey, Naphtali a doe, and Benjamin a wolf. The two tribes of Joseph, Ephraim and Manasseh, are jointly likened to a bull or wild ox. These two tribes made up the larger part of the population of northern Israel, which eventually had its own separate capital, the city of Samaria. The bovine symbolism of the tribes of Joseph, the comparison to cattle, is reflected in passages such as Jeremiah 31:18 and Hosea 4:16. Amos 4:1 even refers to the rich women of the northern kingdom as cows who live on the mountain of Samaria. The lion is the only animal that is assigned to more than one tribe. Though most strongly identified with Judah, it is also linked to two other tribes, one of them being Gad. You can hear the echo of Gad's lion symbol in 1 Chronicles 12:8. Quote, "Some Gadites defected to David at his stronghold in the desert. They were brave warriors, ready for battle and able to handle the shield and spear. Their faces were the faces of lions, and they were as swift as gazelles in the mountains." The Gadites lived on Israel's eastern frontier, across the Jordan. Their experience fending off marauding desert tribes likely hardened their young men into courageous fighters. The third tribe of the lion was Dan, a name that means judge. Dan was unique in being given two animal symbols, the serpent, a poisonous viper, in fact, in Genesis chapter 49, and the lion in Deuteronomy chapter 33. As with many of Israel's lesser tribes, there isn't much biblical history about Dan except in the book of Judges. The most famous Danite was Samson. The story of Samson, which occupies the 13th through the 16th chapters of Judges, is followed by an unusual episode concerning the tribe of Dan in chapter 18. A large group of Danites go seeking land beyond their assigned borders. They hire a self-styled priest and steal an idol from a local shrine, then travel north and destroy the Sidonians in the town of Laish and settle there. Although the Sidonians were Canaanites and idolaters, there are some Sidonians who are mentioned favorably in the Bible, such as Hiram the king of Tyre in 2 Chronicles 2, and the widow of Zarephath in 1 Kings 17. In the books of Joshua and Judges, Canaanites are usually portrayed as warlike people, steeped in idolatry and living in fortified cities. But the Sidonians who are massacred by the Danites in Judges 18 are called a peaceful people, living without defenses. And the only mention of idolatry in this account concerns the idol that the Danites bring with them to worship in the rebuilt city, which they call Dan, after the name of their tribe. This dark and disturbing bit of history makes a mockery of Israel's mission to bring true worship into a land of violence and depravity. In it, the Danites are vagabonds and thieves who make war so that they can exalt an idol. Some verses of these chapters contain clues that this history, although recorded after the story of Samson, actually took place before Samson's birth. Samson was from the same area as the Danite renegades, but his forebears remained behind and instead allied themselves with the tribe of Judah, to whom Samson's hometown of Zorah originally belonged. When Samson attacked the Philistines, in revenge they invaded the nearby territory of Judah. Samson left his great trophy of battle, the gates of the Philistine city of Gaza, at Hebron, Judah's tribal capital. Besides Samson and his parents, the only other Israelites mentioned in his saga are all men of Judah, the great tribe of the lion. So in Judges we have two portrayals of Dan. The Danite migration shows the tribe as faithless and treacherous, a poisonous viper in keeping with Genesis 49. Samson, the lion-like hero who is allied to the royal tribe of Judah, represents the other side of the coin, Dan the lion, as in Deuteronomy 33. I've taken time to explain the animal iconography of the tribes and how it is reflected in Israelite history because it reinforces the conclusion that Samson has a lion-like character in the book of Judges. It gives us all the more reason to believe that the honey that comes from the lion's carcass does indeed foreshadow the sweet taste of freedom that Samson's victories in life and finally in death provided to his people. Before us now is a solid case for a symbolic dimension to Samson's riddle and the surrounding events. To build that case, I've assembled evidence from specific words and their connotations in a range of biblical books. Scientific reasoning, in a sense, has led us here. I don't mean science strictly speaking, of course, but consider how science progresses. Scientists survey a body of information and then notice clues within that information that seem to point in a certain direction. They investigate that direction, or hypothesis, to see whether it offers further insights or leads to a dead end. In Judges 14, we encountered an oddly worded riddle and an oddly worded answer, set in a story that is odder yet. The oddity suggests a meaning below the surface, particularly to someone who believes that the Bible could be inspired by God. God could coordinate prophetic images and layers of meaning in a way that the various human writers of the Bible, working at different times and places, could not. When we probed the Samson riddle for a deeper meaning, we didn't hit a dead end. Instead, we discovered symbolism related to Samson's larger mission, his place in God's purpose for Israel. After the Philistines gave Samson their answer to his riddle, he responded with two more lines of improvised Hebrew poetry. "If you had not plowed with my heifer, you would not have guessed my riddle." On the surface, he is talking about the way they had extorted the answer from his bride. Oxen, not heifers, were normally used for plowing. So the saying emphasizes that the Philistines had not solved the riddle fairly. There is, however, one other verse in the Bible that refers to plowing with a heifer. The heifer in that verse is God's people, Israel. Here is the passage from Hosea chapter 10, verses 11 through 13. "Ephraim is a trained heifer that loves to thresh, so I will put a yoke on her fair neck. I will drive Ephraim. Judah must plow, and Jacob must break up the ground. Sow for yourselves righteousness, reap the fruit of unfailing love, and break up your unplowed ground. For it is time to seek the Lord until he comes and showers righteousness on you. But you have planted wickedness, you have reaped evil." Recall that the northern kingdom, primarily Ephraim and Manasseh, was under the symbol of the bull and cattle in general. So God here calls them a heifer and says that he will plow with them. He brings Judah into this metaphor as well, so that the nation as a whole is included. We gained insight into Samson's riddle, as I said, by considering God's historical dealings with Israel in the time of Samson, by plowing, so to speak, with God's heifer. But we are not finished. The questions in the riddle solution were, what is sweeter than honey? What is stronger than a lion? We've come up with a two-part answer. The taste of freedom from oppression was sweeter than honey, and God's appointed deliverer, Samson, was stronger than a lion. But if the questions do form a riddle, there should also be one answer that satisfies both of them. And I've noted that among the answers that scholars have suggested, there are a couple of promising candidates. We'll take them up in detail in the second part of Samson's riddle.